I've been asked to make a public service announcement first. You're going to exit through these doors at the end of this talk, which is all the more reason you want to maybe move down. There's an exclusive VIP event after this that you can only get into by your DNA makeup, namely being a woman. So rest of you are just going to have to go out this way. The second thing I want to say before I get started is I'm not sure you guys, are you really in the right place? Okay, you're not going to learn anything interesting, factual. It's going to help you do security in your enterprises or anything like that. So no harm done if, you know, you end up in the wrong location. Also, I saw they have like a Baccarat discount thing going on. Okay. And this is not going to be an hour. It's been a long day. We're going to get you guys out of here at a reasonable time. And I also have an idea I might do very impromptu. And I see Matt Bostwick of the New Zealand team starting to freak out at that idea. I think I might just kind of go in the audience and talk to some of you guys, ask you some questions, instead of you asking me questions. So, the topic. I got this mail from Terry. Once I agreed to do the keynote, it's kind of amazing. It's like the mafia. And then it's like, okay, then what about this? And then, like, you're already here. What about this? And I got this mail from this very nice man named Terry Chapman who said, I've got this track. And there he is. Raise your hand. Okay. He said, why don't you do something about being awesome? And my first thought is, like, the people who are awesome would not get up in front of the crowd and talk about awesomeness. And if some of you got to see Dr. Michelle Dickinson's talk this morning about introverts, man, I wish I had watched that before I agreed to do the keynote. But, I mean, I thought that was an awesome talk. Another awesome thing I would say real quick is the amount of time and trouble that the New Zealand Microsoft team has gone to put this event on. It's just mind-boggling, even just to see a little bit of it. I think you guys should make a video for next year about just the, like, even having to herd people like me, like Terry Chapman. You got your slides? You got your slides? Are you going to come? And I think if you saw the numbers, it would blow you away. It would be almost as awesome as those numbers that Chris Ford gave on the sheer amount of pixels that have to get processed for the final rendering of a Pixar movie. Okay, so I just made the title, and then I made some slides to make the title fit the title. On Awesomeness, or How to Inspire Some Awe. So if you went to the keynote last night, you know that was a very deeply technical, factual, and scientific talk. This is another one. And so, you know, I think science starts with some research, right? And then you do some analysis on the data you've collected. And then you try to, like, distill it down to some definitions, right? Some things that might be true. Then you try to come up with equation formulas, theories, theorems, corollaries, lemmas. And then, you know, you see if the real-life awesome data matches your theories. And there you go. Okay, well, I'm going to not bore you guys. Yeah, you heard some of this last night if you were there. So, okay, things I didn't talk about last night. Yeah, you can blame me for the animated dinosaur cursor in Windows 95. I actually had some spare time on my hands. And it was a great way to keep people from rebooting their machine, okay? Because it would be like, is it hung? Well, you have a little spinning hourglass. You know it's not hung. And the funny thing is we would actually have to turn that off when we run benchmarks, because I can actually prove to you mathematically that it would slow your computer down, like an Excel recalc, by 5%. But people thought it went faster. Other things you can blame me for, you can blame me for NetMeeting, sort of the great-great-grandmother of Link Skype. It's amazing how little video technology has actually advanced. I got to be honest on this fact. You still the can you hear me, the connectivity stuff. What do I do? Well, you kind of heard about this. More important than what I do is I actually happen to manage an awesome team. And those of you who are managers know that, like, the best job in the world is to just find yourself an awesome group of people and become their manager. Because it's pretty easy. Like, your job's just not to get in their way. And then you kind of block and tackle. But my awesome team right now is taking care of stuff like expenses and planning for the next major version of Windows, and I was about to say the code name, and I can't do that because I'll get into trouble. Anyway, it's like it's all running. In fact, it's probably running better with me here than it is there. Okay, so some research, very scientific. Some examples of awesome on the left, I think. Some examples awful on the right. And it can be a subtle distinction, okay? Churchill and Mussolini, well, not World War I Churchill. He was just plain wrong about Gallipoli, those of you who are history fans. Very wrong, especially Anzac. Mussolini, yeah, all around awful. Hannibal Lecter, well, that guy had some taste. You know, maybe more on the awful, on the awesome side. Jeffrey Dahmer, yeah, not so much. Okay, this is like a totally tasteless story, but I was doing some research for this. I actually found this out. So Jeffrey Dahmer died in prison, and he died in prison because he was a practical joker, and he just thought it was hilarious to like put ketchup on stuff like it was blood, and the guys in prison just couldn't take it anymore, and they killed him. Anyway, all right. And I know it's wrong, and I know I shouldn't laugh, but I don't know. It's kind of justice, isn't it? All right. Well, awesome. I mean, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, that is a pretty freaking awesome movie, and most of the actors in that have gone on to better and bigger things. Nothing better than like Madame Butterfly in a big scarf. And by the way, I'm realizing I'm wearing a scarf up here. And scarves for women are kind of like capes for superheroes. If you've seen The Incredibles, like it gets you into trouble. You know, you end up getting it caught. Crocodile Dundee, yeah, not so awesome. The movie, I mean, not the guy. Mother Teresa, Kim Kardashian. Okay, that one doesn't really need an explanation. The only thing awesome about Kim Kardashian is how she continues to seem to grow. Okay. Satya Nadella, well, I'm biased. I totally admit it. Oh, yes, Hugh Jackman, Russell Crowe. Satya Nadella, I may be biased because he's the CEO of my company, but he seems like he's a pretty awesome guy, pretty real, down to earth. He says what he means what he says, he has integrity. I think that's pretty cool. Those Google programmer guys, like Alphabet, what the hell? I thought that was a joke when I heard that. Like, they're changing their name. It was like out of the TV series Silicon Valley. Yeah, we're going to change our names to ABC. It's like, is that really for real? Okay. Uber. Uber's pretty cool. I think the ability of, especially in the taxi business, those guys, at least in Seattle, they don't make a lot of money. They work really hard. And to remove the middleman is a pretty profound thing. I think the idea that also I don't need a car. It's a luxury to not have to have one. Although I do admit the new Tesla sure looks pretty great. The one that goes like 0 to 100 kilometers in 5 seconds. Tinder, well, I'm a middle-aged lady. Not so cool, my opinion. Sir Walter Scott, love that. Love that man. Those are great historical books. Dickens, another great writer. 50 Shades of Grey. Okay, this is like a Seattle thing. It's one of those things you hate to hate. You know, kind of like, I would say it's Seattle's Lord of the Rings. 50 Shades of Grey, oh God, you know. And I think I was laying on the couch, and it was free, being offered on Amazon Prime, and it was just so bad. I think Mordecai is the only thing I've seen this year that was worse than that. I mean, it was so bad. I was, like, laughing. It was bad. In fact, there's some scene, I think, where she's in some room in his unbelievable condo, and also the fact that you can get from one side of Seattle to the other in 5 minutes. It's just, okay. When she says, there's my toys, and she goes, oh, do you have an Xbox? That was classic. Unintentionally funny. And of course, I always got to put a pitch in for the home team. Also, cricket, right? Cricket. It's coming up. Okay, I think cricket's awesome. I still haven't quite figured out like what the heck's going on in that game. And every time I think I do, I'm like, oh, okay, now he's going to go for the wicket. And then people just stand around in their whites and they drink tea. So like, I haven't quite figured it out, but I hear it's pretty awesome. Yeah. Okay, so like, you know, kind of what are the things that are awesome sort of have in common? And let me say right now that it's an incredibly, it's paradoxical that I am up here talking about awesomeness because almost by my definition, anybody that would talk about awesomeness isn't awesome. I'm aware of that. It's kind of like being an artist. You don't get to call yourself an artist. You can say you're a painter. You can say you're a sculptor. Everybody else gets to decide if you're an artist or not. Well, I think some things that are awesome, right? Well, altruism, isn't it? Doing things for other people, somewhat when it's inconvenient for you. In fact, Kant, in his Critique of Pure Reason, would say that those are the pure, I don't know that I buy it, but that those are the most moral acts. If you save somebody you love who's drowning in a river, that's pretty good. If you save someone who's drowning that you hate, that's better. I don't think I buy it, because you never know what's in someone's head, but I kind of get the idea. Well, healers. People who make things better, who fix things. To be able to create and preserve, to create something takes such an unbelievable amount of energy. And then to preserve it, it takes energy as well. If you're too busy for interviews, well, I guess I'm doing some interviews tomorrow, so ha. You know, because you're actually busy doing things, making the world a better place. Instead of talking about it, you're doing it. I think classic. You know, you don't want to be like, okay, I have like some photos I've seen of myself. I don't know. I blame Madonna. Okay? There was this whole era where, like, it was fingerless, one-handed gloves and stuff, and that, you know, hair on the side, and that seemed great. And now I look at those pictures, and I was like, oh, God, I'd Mom Burnham. You know, I don't know what I was thinking. Classic, not really caring what other people think. Enduring, I think being sharing is pretty awesome. Investors, folks who are actually building for the long term. I am certainly concerned about these things in Silicon Valley and the whole unicorn thing, and it's like, you know, two guys overnight who I wouldn't let take care of my cat, you know, or like living large, and also the pressure that stock markets and investors put on behavior. You know, if you're sitting there trying to make things look good for Wall Street instead of just make things good, I don't think you're probably doing the right thing long term. Warren Buffett, who is, I think he's in his 80s now, and still beats Bill Gates at bridge, and it drives Bill Gates crazy, which I think is also pretty awesome. You go. All of those who are going to be your age soon, I want you to keep going, Mr. Buffett. But that sense of that you're building for the long term, that you have a campaign in your mind, and it's a long-term campaign, it's a war. And frankly, success is one of those things that, especially in the tech industry, I believe is so completely misunderstood. And it starts because zeros and ones. Now, when I started in the tech industry, there were only like zeros. So you guys have twice as much as I had. But that binary sense, that it's a fail or a success in the moment, it's such, so wrong to me. Success is something that is such a long-term evaluation. It takes perspective. And if you look back at things in time, depending on where you looked and when, you'd probably think differently. And Themistocles, the Greek philosopher, said, you can't even see the carpet of someone's life until it's rolled out. And that you may actually change your view of what happened. Like, history actually changes as you advance in the future. And the Greeks actually thought of, had this view of the future as you were walking backwards into it, looking at the past. And as you got a little further out, you could kind of see things more clearly. I think that's true with success. And finally, to be passionate and motivating. I went to Harvard, and one of the things about Harvard, and I don't know why, but you get all these like really smart people in one school, and all of a sudden, they were all the smartest person in their own little school, and now there's 1,600 of them in one place, and they freak out. And there's folks that are like always the, oh my God, are you studying? And you'd be like, but the final's not for like a month. Oh no, I gotta study, and then that would cause these ripple effects. But then there was this other, and I'd say more pernicious type of person, who was the Sidney Carton, if you know your Tale of Two Cities, kind of guy, was like the, oh, why would you study? You're studying for your Japanese final right now? That's why only morons would study. It's going to be easy. They would act like they weren't trying. They would be blasé. Oh, yeah, no, that's so yesterday. And when you're young and impressionable, you know, people like that can have a big influence. I think that's horrific, actually. And truthfully, at my advanced age now, of 45, and I'm 5'0", but I'm not telling you my weight. Okay, I draw the line. I sit here and I go, people who are bored all the time, I have this light bulb, they're boring. Think about it. How can you be bored with the world? There's unbelievable things. Go, you just have to look. I had a friend, and we would walk down the street, and I would be like, did you see that? Like a meteor just fell from the sky. And he'd be like, no. You know, and that's also what scares me with people like kind of always doing this, kind of missing the world around you. So, the opposite of awesome, awful, well, narcissistic, right? It's all about me, and everyone's looking at me, and who cares, and I got to tell everyone, because everyone really wants to know what I had for breakfast, so I'm gonna blog about it. Herders and haters. Wow, we've got this horrible social phenomenon on the internet lately, right, with trolls and bullying, and I just think that is just such a waste of the medium, right? I imagine the people that are doing this, maybe they've been bullied in their lives. It makes them feel bigger, right? And I can't think of a better way to live than think about the golden rule, right? Treat people the way you'd want to be treated. And people who are doing this, I'm sure they're fine parents or fine brothers and sisters, but would you really want someone behaving that way, you know, to your loved one? It's just horrible. And it's kind of like accelerating, because I think people have to keep topping some of these really bad behaviors. It's very animalistic. It feels like Animal Planet, right? Just like see the weak one of the herd and the lions pounce. And it's just terrible. You know, technology is supposed to connect us up and make us free. And now with people who are just scared to make use of it, that's just horrific to me. Oh, press releases. You know, it's nothing less becoming than a movie star going like, oh, the press is bothering me. It's like, well, then why'd you issue the press release? So you're going to be standing outside the hotel, you know, like, duh, 5 minutes before. Greed, spendthrifts. But yeah, the bored and boring one. That's the one that's my pet peeve right now. Aren't you so bored? It's like maybe they watch too much Masterpiece Theater or something. It's very like Edwardian. Okay, well, defining awesome. Well, I think it's about caring more about doing good than looking good. Okay, I ran up on stage yesterday in a hot pink jacket, these pants, and hot pink sneakers. That's pretty much how I dress all the time. I call them my work pajamas. By Microsoft standards, by the way, that is super dressed up. Like, there's no holes. No, seriously, they were clean. Okay, the pants were clean yesterday. There were no holes in them. And I wasn't wearing some t-shirt like DOS 2.0B, feel the excitement. So that was effort for me. I mean, once a year, maybe, and I like live for the holiday party. I put a dress and no one recognizes me. I got kitted out 2 years ago, and I was like, and nobody even knew who I was. I'm so disappointed. But in general, you know, if you're worrying about how you look, you're probably spending energy on something that isn't propelling the world forward. And I'm going to pull in a Star Trek analogy now, because I can, and obviously I'm a fan of that. I think you only got so much energy you're going to pull out of your dilithium crystals, right? Okay. So you can put it all in the shields. You'll have to maintain life support. Okay. You can waste it on the holodeck. You can fire your photon torpedoes. Or you can use it in the warp drive. I want to go fast through the galaxy and the universe. So I would prefer to have less energy spent on my shields and things like that. So I'm not going to care about how I look. No nonsense, taking care of business without fuss. You know, Microsoft has this thing called we have this annual review cycle, and I'm not giving any secrets away. And I'm sure many of you have, you know, performance reviews and things like that too. And, you know, there's always that guy or gal, okay, I'm going to be less sexist. There's that gal who wakes up, you know, like the month before and is the hero. And it always gets overweighted. And then the people that just took care of business, made things work, didn't cause bugs in the first place for the 11 months of 12 months get overlooked. And I can't, as a manager, actually, I spend more of my time looking for what I would call negative work than positive work. I can see the bugs that were caused. I can see the bugs that were fixed. I can see the lines of code that were checked in. I can see the sizes of binaries. And on fundamentals, performance things, you actually are trying to cut, right? You're trying to use less memory and less storage space and so on. But on the workplace, we just tend to over-index on the positive. I look for where bugs didn't happen. I look for almost gravitational effects. I can tell people who are doing really well because the people around them are start to do well. In fact, if you ever heard the phrase A-team-B team, I hear that a lot, and I think it's just crap. I'd say maybe 1% of the world's A, and maybe 1% of the world just can't get its act together no matter what. And most people are in the middle. But an A-team person is someone who makes everybody around them A-team. I look for that. I think doing the right thing in the face of adversity, wow, isn't that the thing, the hardest thing of all? It's why you set your principles early. You don't set your principles when it's tough. You set your principles when everything's great and the fish, salmon are leaping in the air and, you know, the honey's coming out of the hives. And it's really easy to get everyone to agree. And you set them in advance because when you need them, it's hard. In fact, you know you probably are doing the right thing when it hurts a little bit. And as a leader, somebody, I think about these things actually all the time. I think about what's right. I think about what did I say I was going to do? There are people who are depending on me doing it. Did I do what I said? Am I reporting on how I'm doing? Things go wrong. Things go wrong. That doesn't mean it's failure, right? Weird things happen. Anyone who works in video equipment knows that. Clickers can let you down. And human error besides. You're like, the clicker's not working. But that sense of also the integrity, I mean, I think that that's integrity, right? If you say what you're going to do, you do what you said, and people can start to predict you, you are integral. But the real test, as always, of your mettle is when it's really, really hard. And hard things involve people. The hardest tech problems in the world are people problems, actually, right? The older I get, the more I think that's true. Where you pump out tons of lines of code, and yet the thing doesn't ship. Or where you do it and you can't get it to work. It's a people connection problem. And so doing the right thing about people and not just the product is so easy to overlook. You know, you gotta ship tomorrow. Yeah, make everybody work. Get the minions, you know. And yet it's wrong. And we kind of know it's wrong. And the thing is, when you do something wrong, right away, it's not like you get zapped by lightning. You don't. In fact, the world would probably be a better place if it was more like Minority Report, right? And then you think, well, that wasn't so bad. And then, you know, you kind of cut under the corner, and it can be years. You know, you think about like Enron or some of those places, how long they ran. And in those cases, there were probably a lot of people that weren't sure it was right or wrong, but there were some people that knew it was wrong. And it just got so easy to keep being wrong. And that can never work out long term. There's just no way. I think protecting and aiding the less powerful. Well, I'm 5 feet tall, so I'm a little biased on this one. We moved around when I was a kid. I probably attended 15 schools in 12 years. And I never fit in anywhere. I was like the weird little kid taking extra science to calculus and, you know, and gym class. Like, please, God, don't call me. I did the homework of a lot of our sports team members. I think the Connecticut newspaper wrote about this. It was like my high school sent like this entire football team to like really good schools. They had great, great point averages, and most of them kind of tanked just because I was doing their homework. But we had this like kind of tacit agreement that like you'll pretend I was just here in like, you know, PE class and I'll do your homework. But it's a real mark of a person, you know, who they're nice to when they don't have to be, what they do when the camera's not on them. Kind of think very often people kind of like, you know, I gotta be, managing up. What about managing down? Those are the backs on which you're resting. You know, those people need to be taken care of. They have less power, right? Think about a wait person in a restaurant. You guys don't tip so much. And by the way, it's killing me. Because like I feel like a really bad human being when I go in there. And I'm like, but I just can't put that small amount in the tip line. Like it's wrong, and so I'm kind of weaning myself off of it. But if you're having a bad time in a restaurant, you have all of the power, right? That person can't do anything. You have that person's life, their job in your hands. Think about that. And I think being humble, but a little swagger. Well, I had to add that because that's probably who I am anyway. I watched way too many Bugs Bunny cartoons growing up. Bugs Bunny and Star Trek pretty much explains my entire personality. I learned to count in Klingon. In the United States, you know, Spanish is what most kids take, and I was like, ah. Everybody else is like, uno, dos, tres. that would have been a little more helpful. I think also, but joie de vivre and pizzazz. I mean, some of the things above, they sound like impossible, right? They sound like you're like being a priest and it's unachievable standard, like pressing your own kale juice and eating tofu all the time, and you can't live on that all. Okay, so awesomeness equation. And apologies, I could just not get the formatting right. I'm going to blame PowerPoint now, because I can. I think it's partly, you know, to be fair, you can only have so much impact based off where you started, right? If you grew up in the middle of nowhere with no access to the internet, but as a percentage of where you started, it's awesome. But still, DNA and environment get in there. I think it's ultimately the sum of your impact on people, positive impact over time, divided by hype. Discounted by hype. Okay. This actually won't integrate, by the way, in case you're paying attention. So I think this chart, you know, since you guys love charts and numbers and stuff, it says it all. And of course I made pink awesome, because I could. Okay, pink is awesome. Over time, look, awesomeness increases, right? It's the area under the curve. You remember your calculus, or I should say your analysis. Average, a little bit on the flat side. Dramatic, it's fantastic. Oh, it's terrible. It's amazing. It's oh no. Okay. And then awful, downward trend. And then real life awesome. And then I'm actually going to end it after this. And then I'm going to walk the audience and ask you what you think is awesome. Well, my mom. I am incredibly fortunate, actually. So my mom was a failed nun. She grew up in the middle of the Midwest of the United States, where they, you know, drink full fat milk and they milk cows and cheese and stuff. And she was one of six. They had one bedroom. They had a curtain. So it was three girls, three guys. She was the oldest. And she was pretty much the parent to her brothers and sisters. And she's like 72 now, and they still call her up. And you think, you know, they still fight like they're five. But you ran over my teddy bear. My mom gets this call from one of her sisters. Anyway, so she escaped. She was really, really smart. The best education she could find was a convent school. It was this place called Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, which is also the home of curling, the only sport more confusing than cricket. And she was the valedictorian of her class, and she was kicked out. She was kicked out for two reasons. Number one, it was the era of Sound of Music. Okay, she could not carry a tune. So that was a big problem. And the second reason was she asked too many hard questions. So, you know, no nunnery for you. So obviously I'm grateful, but she met my dad, they got married, and my dad is someone who's a dreamer. He has tons of dreams, and he just always could never quite meet them. And we were like broke, we were always moving in the middle of the night, kind of two steps beyond the law, and my mom just got to a place where she couldn't take it anymore. My dad went on some trip, we had no food in the house, we were in, I think, northern Maine at this point, we were snowed in, she had no driver's license, literally did not know what she was going to do, and my dad came back with presents, and she just said, that's it. She walked out, I was six, she was in her late 20s, we lived on the street for a week, actually. Her family did not want to help her because, Catholic, like, oh my God, you know, you left your husband. And that woman hid it all from me. When we left, it was an adventure. We camped out by chicken coops. I was like, oh, isn't this cool? Chickens. And I got my Christmas present that year was a library card. She couldn't afford anything. But it was the key to all knowledge. We spent Christmas Day, because the library opened up. They said as long as we locked up afterwards. It was like any book I wanted. And when she put herself through school, she put herself through grad school. I know she cried herself to sleep some nights. We had one apartment where there's a hole in the roof and snow was coming in and she's sleeping on the couch. And so the thing I gave her was not letting her know that I knew. Oh, there was one time when, I think it was some kind of trendy pants. So this must have been 70s, so they're probably like bell-bottom, right? I'm like, Mom, can I have this pair of pants? And she got this look on her face. And I realized she didn't know how she was going to feed us that day. I was like, oh, yeah, no, I don't want those pants. But I never was scared. It was a magical adventure. And the fact that she did this for me, and also the fact that there was honor in labor. There was nothing beneath you. If you work, whatever it is that you do, to try to support yourself, that is better than not trying. Hey, we need to fix something, we'll fix it. We need to make something, we'll make it. And that woman is why I'm here today, really. She could do anything. And I am very fortunate she lives with me in Seattle now. In fact, I was going to try to bring her here. And she's finally, actually it took her until she was 50 to get on her feet financially. When I was at Microsoft and we had options, the first batch of options that vested, I sold them instantly because she put me through Harvard. What I didn't know was that my dad didn't pay his part. She put a second mortgage on her house and she was within a month of losing her house. Put me to school. And you can imagine how happy she was when I dropped out. She was not happy. I was like, but Mom, I'm saving you 2 years of tuition. You can buy me a car. She's like, you don't have a driver's license yet. What are you going to do with the car? And I mean, that's probably the one time she didn't talk to me for about 6 months. But I sold those options. I paid, and I would do it again, without even thinking about it. You know, think about freedom, right? If you think about, I'm going to draw a graph about money, it would be the marginal value of the dollar goes like this, and then you pass some limit of some kind of freedom of being able to decide a little bit what you want, not the this is the cheapest milk. Or the cheapest orange juice. And then, you know, and then it starts to decay. She was here. So, like, the value of that was just, I'd do it again. Really an inspiration. And so now she's not here because she's got a better social life than I do, actually. She's off speaking somewhere in New Orleans. But it really took her until her 60s to kind of come into her own in her career. She runs basically the head of economics and performance for the Seattle City Lights, which is a municipal electric utility in Seattle. It's one of the only ones left in the United States. And what's the problem, it's actually, we have the cheapest power rates pretty much in the country, and we like to charge California a lot for excess power. warms the cockles of my heart. But the other problem with it is just, it's so much money that everybody who wants to do anything in Seattle, like, tries to hide it in the electrical company's budget. Hey, we need a streetcar. Like, that should be the electric company, because it needs electricity. Anyway, really great lady, all around class act. Mr. Peterson, my calculus teacher in high school. So, the thing that this man did was he made math interesting, fun, and personal. Because, you know, if you've ever taken complex analysis, anybody raise your hand, like, you know, the calculus of imaginary numbers, Riemann surfaces and stuff. All right, you have that professor who's like, draws some crazy integral up there, and then he goes, and then it's obvious that it's 5. And then, you know, you go try to do the problem set, it's like 20 pages, okay? You're like, you liar. All right. Well, you're like, how did they even come up with this? Like, how do we even get here? This guy kind of started us back in time, and just, we used to tell us little stories. So, like, I still to this day, I remember the Pythagoreans. They were like vegetarian hippie people. It was like this cult. Like, this was a time in Greece when philosophy, math, and all this, they were all like the same. And so they were like these little gangs. They were almost like the Crips of the Bloods. And it's just the human aspect of it and the things that were people were wrong. And he made it human. So it wasn't just that it was this cool tool, but that there were people that had been a part of it, and they were wrong sometimes, but that they, so it's like, oh, man, he made it alive. I just think about that, especially in the United States, by the way. We teach so much by rote. History in particular is terrible a lot of the time. We even, I mean, your average, I think, 5-6-year-old, this is the first thing they hear. Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492 and discovered America. Every single thing in that sentence is wrong. Explains a lot about the United States, doesn't it? Christopher Columbus, that wasn't his name. It was Cristoforo Colombo, okay? And he wasn't Spanish. Okay, I left out part. He was Italian. And it wasn't 1492, even with the Gregorian calendar change, that's wrong. He set sail in 1493. He went and asked Isabella and Ferdinand in 1492 because they had unified the country and they were looking to spend some money and he thought he'd get some. Anyway, but that is a classic. So we bore the history out of the kids. So anybody who can really make something complicated or technical interesting, it's like, that's a hero. Oh man, I have a typo up there. I'm gonna blame Terry. Terry, how did you not catch, is that awesome? Okay, Brad Silverberg. Well, he's currently the chairman of Ignition Partners. It was the first venture capital company founded that was mobile only. He was my boss in Windows 95. And he made it all look easy. And I'm sure that guy had moments where he was like, gonna freak out. But I mean, it was just, he made it deceptively simple. And what took me about 10, 15 years to realize was that he spent time every day making things simpler. Right? Entropy is the natural order of the universe. So anybody who can make things simpler is a pretty powerful person. It was whatever you're gonna do, it had to fit on your hand. Okay? No 6 priorities. No 11, you know, things to do. It was all gonna be like, and just refine the mission. What's the mission? What are we doing? What's the mission? No doubt. No, I get that Windows 95 is a little unstable right now, but you're running it on your desktop. If we can't run it, how can we ask anybody else to run? It was just stuck to the line and really remarkable man and still doing killer stuff. I'm gonna see him. We have actually a huge party, Windows 95 reunion. I think Jay Leno's gonna be there. I picked out my dress like 3 months ago and I've been on diet. In fact, I think I stopped eating now so I can fit in that dress. Okay, another awesome place, I'll tell you the Himalayas. Have you ever been there? Nepal is a place that's both amazing and a heartbreak place at the same time. Ladakh is Nepal without pollution. But these places, just not even the scenery and the geography, but the fact that they're at these crossroads of cultures. You have Tibetan, and you have Sanskrit, and you have Chinese, and Persian, and here's Indo-European, and this is sort of where it started. I think it's interesting, actually, observation about New Zealand is the mix of cultures here, too. I love it. I love that you have, like, you know, English words, New Zealand words, and then there's Maori. I think it's just fascinating. It's awesome. And then one last person who's actually is really, truly awesome is Alex Kitman, who is the head of HoloLens. So like, I saw this guy from afar, and I see this guy with like this, you know, hair, and you know, it's almost like gleaming like Prince Valiant, one of those cartoons. And I'm like, yeah, come on. Every time I get to hear this guy speak, it blows my mind. I mean, I literally feel like somebody has put a high-speed connection like into my brain and I'm having I.O. problems. And just how he thinks about technology. And it's not just HoloLens, you know, Kinect. And he's a Surface Hub. That's another thing that he's up to. But just about how the things that are possible. No one would have thought that we'd actually be able to make a headset with the processing power that could map the room and then put holograms on it. I actually got a tour, so this was kind of cool. Went down the secret labs. Down the basement of the building. And it's a little bit MI6 bondish because the building is the one where all visitors come in and all the campus new hires go to orientation. And then there's like this secret little elevator. And I'd never noticed it before, but there's like 4 really big guys standing right there. Anyway, you get on this elevator and like get smart and you somersault through a cage and then kaboom. And I got to do several things, but the coolest one that I did, I blew up a rock on Mars. Okay, so NASA, I know it felt wrong. No, so NASA is partnered with the HoloLens guys, and you can actually remotely manipulate one of the rovers that's there. And so like, I got to swing an arm, and then I got to beam a laser, and a piece of rock went. And I'm like, am I really? Do I have to like pace? I mean, this just doesn't seem right. But it's pretty freaking cool. And I think it's very smart, even how they're going about it. We all know, we all want the holodeck for ourselves at some point, right? But it's going to take a long time for the battery life, the technology, and for it to all be really great. And I think, and at the price point that you wouldn't feel like an idiot, you know, for buying. going after commercial business first, I think is really super, super smart. Because there are uses, like actually construction is another example I got to see. People designing buildings, they go to all incredible amounts of time, trouble, and money to build 3D models, right? And then, like directors do in movies, the client goes, oh, but can I have the fountain over there? And then, for all you know, there's rebar or something, right? It's just unbelievably expensive, and especially when it's under construction, it's even more expensive. And the ability to actually visualize things and walk through for construction and remodeling and so on is really profound. And then to connect it up to the schematics. Oh, there's a sewer right here. We can't really build weight-supporting beams. Anyway, really great guy. And most of all, I want to say thanks to you folks. You're spending several days here. You're taking your time, your trouble, your money. And so I think you're pretty awesome just for showing up. Anyway, that's all I have to say. So, conclusion. Thanks. I told you you weren't going to learn anything useful here. I'm not going to preach at you, but I really do believe, awesome is part of, you know, great. To be great, I think, takes an incredible amount of energy, actually. It's like relativity, right? So where does that energy going to come from? It's got to come from, like, here. It's like a reverse Horcrux. And so I think if you do great things, or great to other people, then you will produce great stuff for the world, and that would sum up my philosophy probably in a heartbeat. Okay, so questions. So I heard from Michelle Dickinson this morning that I should also ask people who don't raise their hands. Anyone have questions about anything? I could tell you stories like climbing up bubble wrap in the lobby, and I wish I hadn't lied about my weight. It was very embarrassing. Anybody? No? Okay, you're my favorite person. You need that first person to like prime the pump. I'm going to come over here. Okay, what's your question? Favorite prank. Oh, man. Okay, so there's a guy, he runs a company now called Big Fish, which is a video game thing. And he went on vacation. And what they did is he had a corner office. And we're always kind of remodeling the buildings. In fact, they were remodeling my building, like, around me as I was kind of getting ready to come here. And I'm like, I need 5 more minutes. Save, save, save. What they did is they literally plastered over his office. And, I mean, and it looked, and he came back, and he could not find it. And then they told him he moved to Building 7, and there's no Building 7 at Microsoft. And the guy for like a week, just, and then he finally figured out it was drywall. I'd say the second one, although this is a little destructive, is somebody went, I think got married, and they took Dixie cups, okay, and then they went back to front, like fill them with water and then staple them. Okay, to do this around electrical equipment is a little irresponsible. That was pretty good. Anybody? Oh, man. Okay. Well, so I went to university when I graduated from high school when I was 16, and I didn't have a driver's license. And the only job I'd had up till that point was being like a cashier in my town grocery store because I couldn't drive. And so when I came back from college my freshman year, I couldn't drive anywhere. I got a job in a bank. Well, it was actually a savings and loan data processing center. Those are the days with like the washing machines and like almost like the big tape things. Okay, so I was the tape librarian. And I thought I had like the best job ever because I got to sit in an air-conditioned room and pretty much just read all day. I read War and Peace, you name it. But it was very clear, like the guy who was my manager said, if there's ever a problem like a fire, well, and actually maybe once a day I'd have to like go find a tape, but you know, whatever, is we're going to pump out, I think we're going to pump Freon in the room and you have 30 seconds to get out. And those tapes are more important than you, so you better get out. All right, so I got back to school, and you know, I worked in the kitchen. I mean, we were broke, right? So I gave blood. Actually, I found out I have really great blood because I earned a lot of money when I was in college by donating blood and also participating in psych experiments. So don't believe any psych experiments you ever see from Harvard because it's like the same 12 broke people. But anyway, so I got back to school. It's absolutely true. Okay. You're like, 95% of Harvard people are 5 feet tall. Okay, so I go back to school, and everybody had the most glamorous job. I mean, I was like drooling, okay? It's like, oh, I was Rajiv Gandhi's personal assistant. Oh, I was a supermodel. Oh, I, you know, investigated war crimes at The Hague. And what did you do? I worked in a bank, you know. Okay, so I was like, I got to get my act together. And I was taking an extra class. because freshman year had been pretty good. In fact, I decided to major in math because it really didn't have a lot of math, a lot of course requirements. It seemed like, okay, I could take some other stuff. That's a great idea. And so I took an extra class, and then I was a TA for a math section for calculus. And I didn't know it was a pre-med section. And people who are pre-med, they have to keep their GPAs up. They like are just the most desperate, grade-grubbing human beings you'll ever see. And Matt Damon was in my section, and I told him to drop it. So I'm going to take credit for that. Anyway, so but the teacher, like the second day, just gave one my home phone number and like disappeared. So I was taking extra class. I was working jobs. I was doing this, and I had no time. And I was like, so I'm like, okay, I just got to wander in the Career Center. So I wander in the Career Center. This is like February. And this is the era of investment banking. So like if you ever saw the show Family Ties, you know, like the bow ties and the navy blazers, Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is where anybody wanted to work as an intern. And I thought I was interviewing with Goldman Sachs. This person just pulls me in the room and says, oh, you must be my next interviewer or interviewee. And I go, yeah, hi. And they ask me these weird questions. Like, how would you estimate the death rate in Boston? Okay, this is before the internet, right? If you just had a paper, like, ah, I'd probably look at the obituary section, I'd go over the sports page, maybe traffic, look at the geography. And they just asked me these very like Sherlock Holmes, MacGyver questions. And the next thing I know, they're like, hey, great, you're hired. You want to come to dinner with us? And I'm like, oh, I don't have any money. And they're like, no, you silly, we'll pay. And it wasn't literally until like the next day and I got the official offer that I found was this company called Microsoft. I had no idea who the hell Microsoft was. My dad still says it like that, too. So I'm like, no. It's like, no, I don't write codes, Dad. I write code, okay? Microsoft. But and I was like, well, but all I knew is these people, they sent me plane tickets. They told me how to get from the airport. They put me up in temp house, put me up in an apartment. And I was like, wait, so I'm just going to, like, you guys, and I can sit inside a real office that where I'm not going to die, where you're going to suck out the hair. So I was like, heck yeah. And I was so busy, I didn't really have any other options anyway. And so I show up Memorial Day weekend, and I had $28 and change in my wallet. And like, they forgot. So this was Word for Windows 1.0. And they put in for a ton of interns, because interns were like free slave labor, right? So they put in for a ton. And they forgot. And then the interns showed up. And the thing is, Word for Windows 1.0 is going to ship any day now. It sat in that state for about a year. And all the bugs were in printing and in text formatting. And they weren't gonna let interns touch that code, because that's the hardest code. So they didn't know what to do with us. I kinda had to hack my way into a job. And anyway, so I forgot your question. Actually, how I ended up at Microsoft. Oh yeah, okay. So that wasn't gonna go anywhere. So they gave me this project. And this project was to go look through the source code logs, figure out who checked in what bugs were there, and then generate a mail. So probably 3-4 weeks into my, by the way, free soda in the kitchen and free Lipton cup of soup and free milk because I was broke. I was like, this is great. I mean, I had salt poisoning or food poisoning probably every couple days, but I was free. I lived in my office. And anyway, so this mail goes out, and this guy in like 10 minutes comes in my office and starts screaming at me in some slightly Slavic kind of language. Well, his name was Charles Simoni. And he was Hungarian, and so that was a problem, because it wasn't Slavic at all. And he actually is retired from Microsoft. He's a billionaire. He founded something, and I think like a whole college in Cambridge. I don't even know. This guy's just yelling, like, you moron, T-Lower B, who hired you? You know, you like should have never been born, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, just talk to the hand. All I know is like, wait, am I going to lose? And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm going to lose access to my free soda. Like, what am I going to do? And so I'm like, you know, I know. Yeah, you know, because basically the guy was the guy who owned all the hardest code in the product. He had the most bugs. He was fixing the most bugs. It was a stupid project. So my project got killed in 3 weeks. And I'm like, okay, please don't send me back. And meanwhile, so I started playing around with Windows it was actually Windows 3.0 or Windows 2.1.1 at the time, because they could not get the time of day. Windows was the thing that was going to take bullets, okay, until OS 2, you know, or Unix, you know, ascended and took its rightful place, and you know, on the pantheon. And so they were like, please fix your push button bugs. I mean, Word had the old flat Mac oval style things. They looked horrible. It must have been Windows 3, yeah. And they're like, Windows, that's never going to go anywhere. So I had all this time on my hands. So I just like started playing around and filing bugs. And one day I get this phone call. It's like, T-Lower B, like, who are you? you like open up like 200 bugs in our database. I was like, oh no, am I in trouble? And they were like, well, maybe we give you access to the source code, like you could debug some of these things. And I was like, sure, I got nothing to do. And by the way, there were like 16 interns in this one conference room. We were almost like in bunk beds in this space. But so then, you know, I get this phone call like a month later, and they're like, hey, could you fix some of them maybe if we give you write access? The next thing I knew, I dropped out of school and I was there. And it was the best. I mean, it was like going from Kansas to Oz. I'm like, wait, you're actually going to pay me to do stuff that I like to do? Because at Harvard, my mom's paying a lot for me to do a lot of stuff I don't like to do at all. And it's so true. And I mean, 24-hour grocery stores. I grew up in this town where everything closed at 8. And there were no shenanigans. Somebody who knew you was going to see you. And I don't know, it wasn't very smart, but it was like a high school, one of these rally race things, and it was like steal the sign of your last name. Butler. Yeah, that was pretty hard to track down. There's only one of us. Okay. So I was like, oh my God, there's ethnic, like I come into SeaTac Airport and they're speaking Japanese at me. And the grocery stores are open all the time. I was like, this is the best place ever. I felt like I was home for the first time. Anyway, so I grew up with a company. And it's had its upsides and its downsides. But just that time. And it was a time when what was being taught in universities was useless. Okay? Everybody who was looking for folks, they were looking for electrical engineers, physicists, mathematicians, or just strange problem-solving type kooky people like me. Because computers, as it was being taught, was like Turing machines. So some nice, fine theory, but like completely useless. Like, I mean, literally, I had this as a project, and this would have been 1989, was, okay, make an operating system and assume you have like infinite memory, disk space, and connectivity. You're like, well, isn't the whole point of an operating system that you don't, right? So I was like, well, that's not a very useful project. So that's that story. Sorry, that was a very long answer. Sorry. Okay. Well, I see the signs. Oh, one more question, please. Okay, I'm gonna come up this way again. My hearing's not so good, so if I can, it's actually easier to understand what you're saying when I can see your face. That's my excuse anyway when people talk to me.
Hello.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And those were the two most awesome leaders that I saw in the company at the time. Do you agree with that?
So with Dave Thompson?
Dave Thompson.
He was my mentor.
Oh, he was your mentor?
Yeah, he retired from Microsoft. He's doing Habitats for Humanity now. Oh. He's going to, like, especially Latin America and building houses. Oh, hey, Michael. Michael Brick, another awesome person here in the audience, folks. Terry Myerson, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everybody, we all have superpowers, but they can also be our kryptonite, right? The thing that can be really great in the wrong situation, like talking a lot, can get you into trouble. And I think Terry's superpower is he's a disruptor. I mean, I actually left Microsoft and I came back in 2009 and it was to work on Windows Phone because he had just moved over there. And so as a disruptor, like you can do more, why not? Why can't we? You know, a little bit like, well, why can't we make Windows as a service? So I think that's great. I think what's interesting now is Windows is an incumbent. You know, it's easy to be the political challenger and just like take pot shots at the, you know, whoever's in office. But then when you're in office, it's kind of like all the reality of it kind of sets in. So I think it's just been interesting to watch him grow. It was his birthday just as I flew out here. So he's 1 year younger than me. So I told him he has to show me some respect. Respect for your elders. I think another person, I've actually gotten to talk to Chi Lu a little bit, who's the head of the Apps and Services Group. And these guys are all just fascinating, great leaders in different ways. Like Chi, that man is actually probably the smartest human being I've ever spoken to in my life, like theoretically smart. And he writes physics papers like for fun or something, 3 a.m. Okay. Anyway, and what I talked to this guy, I'm just like blown away. He comes in a t-shirt and he apologizes for having kept me waiting on a month. And I was having a one-on-one with him and he's the kind of person who's like, oh, I see you're free today. On a last minute one-on-one, of course, it's Thanksgiving, it's like a holiday, because I think he just works all the time. But he's such a big person that he doesn't have to, and he's also, well, he's huge compared to me, but he's not a basketball player size. He doesn't need to act big. you know, that makes me think back to the awesomeness, thought a little bit about just the courtesy that he has. And just the time that person, he spends on, like, why is the group together? Why are we putting all these internet application, whether they're enterprise or consumer things together? Like, really a deeply smart guy. So, anyhow. Right, you want to get out of here now and get some drinks? Bia, this way. Quick, tell me, what's a really great local restaurant?